Seven?
No.
He has faces beyond count, little one. As many faces as there are stars in the sky. In Braavos, men worship as they will. But at the end of every road stands him of many faces, waiting. He will be there for you one day. Do not fear. You need not rush into his embrace.
Welcome to the White Book Podcast, the original A Game of Thrones LCG podcast. Originally founded in 2010 as Two Champs and a Chump, we decided to rebrand when the game relaunched in the second edition. A huge thank you goes out to Fantasy Flight Games and George R. R. Martin for this game and world we love, and of course to my co-hosts and you, the listeners. Please, if you enjoy the show, leave us a review on iTunes or your platform of choice, comment on our Facebook threads, or even better, support us on Patreon. We love turning that kind of support back into the community. This is Season 10 of the White Book Podcast.
Fine, this is why we have separate audio tracks. I can just delete his audio.
No, but then everyone misses Rye's burp on cast. Because it's like his burp of death for the death of Game of Thrones, the living card game.
DC,
we got two more months before it's a DCG.
Ouch. Well, it arguably is already a DCG. Just dying, not dead.
That's true. But what does dead may never die, they say?
That's what I hear. I feel bad, kind of, you know, making these sort of jokes on air on the podcast when, you know, I theoretically still want people, like, listening to the show and playing the game and all. So,
well,
you know.
I view this as an Irish wake when we get in this kind of situation. You know, we're celebrating the game. In a sad, drunken way.
Okay, that's fair.
I'm drinking, so.
Yeah, I mean, I am not going to give up a longstanding tradition now of drinking while podcasting. I mean, we made it through, 8 years of that. Surely, yeah, I can make it through a couple more months.
Fair.
Yeah. Well, I mean,
are we not doing the magic podcast that this becomes? Is that out the window?
we'll sort that out. We're gonna. This is as good a time as any to announce this episode will mark our usual holiday break. So after listeners hear this, we're gonna be off the air for a couple weeks. So you know, maybe we can discuss that during that time.
I know what subject I want to do when we come back.
About Thrones or about the hypothetical magic cast?
About Thrones. I know what the last podcast I want to do in Thrones is. It should be really obvious. What is the subject?
Final restricted list.
Of course, that's what I want to talk about. I'm gonna spend the 2 hours and try and come up with the final restricted list of the game.
Okay.
And you gotta go down doing what you're best at.
Or at least worst at.
Theory crafting restricted lists is something that
it was like my
played your head.
It was my hobby for 6 years. Not even playing Thrones. Theory crafting restricted lists.
It's true.
Oh man, good plan. But I mean, if Aaron does that, how am I going to find one last location to severely and blatantly underrate?
I'll try and restrict a location, and you can yell at me.
But we have to do the final pack review. Like that's.
That's true.
Oh, I guess that does the final pack. No, I guess that doesn't count as a 2019 release since this week.
The final pack comes out in January, I think, right? Or February, maybe?
Or March or April or never, whatever. Is anyone buying it? Are you guys buying it?
Isn't it just Q1 and they haven't said more than that? I'm not sure.
Yeah, I mean, they announced, that it's not legal for the main event at Worlds, right?
Right, right.
So that makes it makes me feel like it would be available at Worlds. So
sure. Yeah. I think they would be really missing out if they did not have that on sale at the last Worlds they run.
But are you guys buying it?
I will.
Yeah.
It will basically for me, it would be how interested I am in playing Melee if I'm able to make it to Worlds. If I'm interested in playing Melee, then I will have to buy the pack because almost certainly a bunch of those cards are busted in Melee. So,
all right. Well, tell you what, let's introduce ourselves on this week. If I didn't screw up the numbering here in my notes with technical error episodes, I think we're on 407. So there we go. I'm Will.
I'm Roy.
Konnichiwa, bitches.
And Greg Atkinson.
It was such a good time in my life when Aaron Glazer's name in the Long Lancers chat was Greg Atkinson, and it confused so many people that, you know, it would show up in their notifications that Greg Atkinson has messages in the Long Lancers chat.
The best was that, like, he's so controversial. Fantastic. Some people were really happy and some people were really mad. It was really great.
I forget. I think it was during a Second Sons episode that I did that.
No, it was during a white book.
No,
I introduced myself during a white book as Gregory Sean Atkinson.
And
he was like, okay. It was changed by the time the podcast had ended.
Yep.
Oh, that's right. Okay.
Well, speaking of changing things, before we change topics, and I completely missed this particular one, there is one other bit of potential news that I feel like it's really worth bringing up here on the show, particularly with this talk of
first edition Red Viper.
Yeah, no, they're going all the way back to CCG Red Viper. It's going to be great, Buzzsaw Viper.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, actually, the immune one was originally a CCG card, but anyway. All this talk about the whole dying card game thing did make me think of the other bit of news that potentially cracks me up, in that folks were freaking out a little bit about registration changing for winter. Was it not winter is coming .com or windsofwinter.com?
Of winter, yes.
Yeah, yeah. And people theorizing that is being claimed now for a book announcement incoming. And while I remain deeply skeptical that another novel comes out before George dies.
Another nut.
Wow.
That sounded
laser level that, cynicism. Wow.
Yeah, that sounded way darker than I meant it to.
2019 has really changed the world. Like, Will has laser level cynicism about George R. Martin. Jesus. Wow.
And Roy,
this is what the world has come to. Well, at least to finish that thought, is this twisted part of me would just love it so much, would be gleefully giggling to myself if the next novel dropped within months of FFG announcing, sorry, we're washing our hands, there's nothing else to be done, we're out of content.
That would be great.
I like that we're actively choosing to pretend that no more content had anything to do with them killing the game.
I mean, yeah.
Look, I just wish they had just said that the game is complete and that's it. Like, that they view the game on a design level as being complete.
Wait, what's that song? I mean, oh my god, you remember that? Like, you remember that early song, that early 90s song that sounded like, you make me completely miserable. That's so Thrones.
Yeah. Oh man. Well, I. I feel like we are dancing kind of sideways into our topic for this episode. So I'm going to rearrange the order here a little bit and announce that, and then I'm going to pick up where I left off. So this is our 2019 recap year-end episode, and I've got kind of a questionnaire for the guys, and about three quarters of the way through it, I had notes here on best and worst FFG moves for 2019.
Is that
first? But let's, since we're already there, let's just go ahead and do it. And I'm going to go ahead and throw out there that the worst move, I think, among several, was definitely the weird kind of, I don't know, cover stories for things here in the back half of the year. Like Roy said, the whole content thing just felt weird. If they had just said, you know, we view the game as complete, it would have felt much more forthright. I don't know. It just, that whole interview and interaction in particular just felt really icky to me as a fan. I can much easier buy a company just saying, hey guys, you know, the time has come. We're sorry, but we have to be done with it. But it was this weird waffling, hey, I don't want to be the bad guy sort of thing.
So if you had to predict how FFG would end the game, would it have not have been in the most ham-fisted way possible? Because I thought it was just like, oh, that's appropriate. You did it.
Totally. I personally thought it sort of was, the most...
but the other LCGs that have ended, they've done that. They've just announced, hey, this is the end, you know, for reason X, Y, or Z.
Yeah, but we're the insane ones.
Yeah.
We are the insane ones. That is true. My personal like prediction was that it would be at Worlds they would do it in the most ham-fisted way possible. And there's a part of me that feels like they wanted to wait until Worlds to do it.
I think there was obviously some kind of waiting involved, some internal hemming and hawing over something, because that had to have been what pushed the prime/regional season into, you know, the very tail end of this year and start of the next, right?
I just spoke to Johnny for like 45 minutes about exactly what point Danny knew the game was going to end, and his design became, F it, let's just do this shit. Because, like, it's definitely before the Tarn box, right? Like,
we're doing it live.
We've all read and played with the cards in the Tarn box by now. It's definitely before the Tarn box.
It's definitely around probably when the Greyjoy box was, or the Vera box was designed, rather, not the Greyjoy box. Greyjoy box was last year.
Yeah. It was this time last year.
Oh my God. It wouldn't honestly shock me if it was during the Greyjoy box. And they were like, show's ending. Screw it. Seems good.
Yeah.
Feels like, man, so much has happened this year. When you point out the Greyjoy box was last year, that even just has me thinking about, you know, the various turns the meta has taken in 2019. It's gone through a lot.
It has gone through a lot. The game's evolved a lot over the last year. For better and worse.
What's your worst FFG move, though?
So I'm going to just exclude the whole
game dying
announcement of the game dying. Like, and I'm going to go with the OP structure that they announced. I think
the way they announced it
and just the whole way that OP was restructured, I think it has ended in a way that could theoretically work, but it was laid out in a way that was just so hodgepodgey and confusing and poorly communicated that I just was really, it was less like in the past, it made me angry. Like, I mean, anyone who listens to Second Sons episodes will know that, you know, kicking OP FFG is something that I've got no problems doing. Now it just, this year just made me feel sad about it. Like, it was just kind of like such an afterthought. And I just, that was the most disheartening thing about this last year, that official FFG OP was so hodgepodgey, confusing, renamed. And there's no coincidence that the best US run official FFG event of this year, since there's no Worlds this year, is yours, Will, and it was run by a fan, not an official FFG event.
Oh. So. Hey. Mine is killing the game, but not for the obvious reason. It's because they could have kept it going for basically free and just been pure profit.
But I don't think that's the case. I mean, how could they have kept it going for free?
We're insane. We do, like, everything, right? Like, all they have to do is be like, all right, cool, we're going to give you PDFs. What is that sound?
Oh, sorry.
Christ. Stop doing that. All right, in the meantime, they could have basically just been like, here's a new PDF of cards every 6 months, and we all would have kept playing. We all would have given them our money.
Oh, some kind of, like, light Cthulhu style.
We would have paid them forever, all of us. Lightbook would have hit episode 3,000. But they were just
I think we definitely would have survived releases just being dialed back.
Yeah.
Like you said, like Cthulhu did, if it was one deluxe size box every 6 months or something, like, there would have been grumbling. I know the community well enough to know that. And there probably would have been a couple of hotheads, but like 90% of the community would have been like, okay, yeah, we'll roll with it.
They were just like, we don't like your money. Thanks, though.
I mean, the problem is, the reason why I can't give them too hard a time about this is we don't necessarily know what their what their deal with Martin is, right? Like, they might have to pay Martin out every time they print something. Like, we don't know. Like, I'm willing to give them a pass on that. I feel like, considering that they released an expansion for the board game like 20 years after it came out, I feel like if they could milk it for a little bit more money at low effort.
No. See, I think
they would have done
it. No, I think it's just new companies like cut it all. Like new ownership and like lack of Christian Peterson is just like cut it. And they're just like, no, screw your free money. We're not dealing with this shit. These people are annoying.
I mean, I think I had mentioned on the show before, or I've at least mentioned talking to people off the show. I really do think that the ownership changes and now the leadership structural changes since then, like Christian being gone, mean that the like profitability bar that a game needs to cross to stay around got a lot higher. I think somebody like Christian, for all his personal pluses and minuses, whatever those may be, this is not a show about that, but he is definitely a guy that was a fan of their games and pushed hard to do like everything possible to keep something kicking, and without him around, I just think everything just became a lot more corporate. Like, not FFG, but Asmodee is effectively the Electronic Arts of board games. And
I mean, definitely, that is definitely the case. That's definitely the case.
What's negative? What's the best thing of FFG did this year?
Oh, the actual like prize kits, I think. Those have been really killing it this year. I do think, I mean, here I am saying a downside, slight downside I discovered in trying to give prizes out after nationals or grands. There's a lot of tracking involved in handing them out with all of the house specific stuff. But I think there's a lot of upside to that too. And so in general, I think they were really solid this year.
I'll take the restricted list. Like, they should have hit Night's Watch, but besides that, I think it was basically perfect.
You're talking about the last restricted list?
Yeah, of course.
the most recent restricted list is the one that got it right. Like, it didn't hit Night's Watch hard enough, and eventually the Targ box came out. But, like, that was still months away. But, like, short of not hitting Night's Watch and, like, the really, really bad Night's Watch cards were still literally the same month as the restricted list. So, like, it's hard to be too mad at them for that. I think they really nailed one, and I'm happy they gave me one restricted list to make me happy.
Yeah, I can. I'll be more honest with, or broader than Glazer, I guess. Here, I think overall restricted list management this year was much better than it has been in the past. I think that they hit. I think there were three or four restricted lists this year. But I think that they only really punted at one, and that was the initial restricted list that didn't actually hit Greyjoy. That would have been, I think, right after Nationals, right?
Mm-hmm.
That restricted list, I'm thinking, or was the one right before Nationals?
I think it was
the summer one. I think
before.
Yeah, the summer one that didn't actually bring Greyjoy into line. That one they made a pretty big mistake with. But I think that the previous one earlier in the year that brought Stark into line, I think was really well done, and I think it was more realistic to what the actual meta is than any other time since FFG decided to start doing a restricted list. And I was just really, I think design had gotten to a place where they had a better understanding of where the restricted list should be and what its goal should be in any other time since first edition. And probably in many ways, like on a philosophy level, a little bit better than first edition. Because first edition's kind of attitude was sort of just like ban the deck that wins a big event versus like really thinking about
and a little bit of everything else.
Yeah, and a little bit of everything else. Like, so I was really sort of proud of where design was at that point. I thought they had learned a lot. And I think, as Aaron said, the most recent restricted list showed, you know, look, everyone's human. It's hard to balance games. Like, no restricted list is ever going to be perfect. But they was about as close as you could really expect. So I was really happy. I think that's probably the biggest design success as well of the year was the restricted
list. Tune in after the new year for a perfect restricted list.
Yeah, please.
I've done a lot of restricted list weeks Glazer, crafting that.
We miss just game. As much as Danny and Nate do.
Sometimes. All right.
So. Let's see, design-wise, then, I think maybe that kicks us back towards the beginning of my list, because I also wanted to hit favorite and least favorite cards from 2019. And you guys were debating at the start of the show about what was actually released in 2019. I didn't necessarily specify it had to be released in 2019. I just said, you know, card of the year. So it could be, I don't know, something from the core set that suddenly just became unbearably annoying to see all the time.
Well, if that's what you're going to do.
The wall.
I mean, I'm saying you could. You don't have
to. Don't let Roy take the wall and Mace Tyrell.
No. That's not what I'm going to say. You're very unfair to me. Frequently, Glazer. I was actually going to say Drowned God Fanatic was the card of the year. I think that the dominance of Greyjoy
on the favorite or least favorite side.
I guess,
or both.
It's a little bit of both, actually. It's actually both, because I loved Drowned God and hated Greyjoy mid-range decks. But I mean, I guess you could say that to me is probably the card of 2019, even sidestepping favorite or least favorite. I believe this card was published this year. At the Gates is my favorite card, 2019.
Oh.
I really like what it did for a variety of strategies that I'm interested in playing. I think it hit the right level of consistency for Thrones. I think at the end of 2019, it was clear to me that the attempt to balance the game around economy and trying to create a faux Magic or Hearthstone style econ curve where turns did curve not completely linearly, but semi-linearly. That was sort of a design goal in the core set and the first cycle. Like, that way of balancing the game utterly failed. So I feel like at the Gates did a really good
failed exactly. I mean, I think it's more just that it was abandoned. I think it ran for a while and Danny had a different point of view.
I think Nate had a different point of view as well, because it still started when...
Obviously,
I think they're both different, right?
Our point of views were...
Yeah, they're both different point of views, but I do think that they both started to move away from it, because I feel like once you start concentrating the most exciting characters in high cost slots, which was a Nate decision, that Danny just made worse, you create all kinds of weird incentives in design, and you get Greyjoy, you get Stark, you get Lannister. But anyway, this is actually really great for when we do our retrospective about the game, which and second edition. Like, I have a lot of opinions about this. But anyway, not here nor there. At the Gates, I think it leveled the playing field in a way that I found really great. And particularly once Great Hall got restricted. And it became about getting, I think, a fundamentally fair card, which is Gates of the Moon.
Thankfully, Great Hall was restricted, although it's still so often the choice. What's yours, Will?
Yeah.
I do have separate favorite and least favorites. Hilariously, my least favorite is At the Gates, due to its ubiquity, and just kind of boringness. I'm always not a big fan of plots that become too smoothing and repetitive and kind of just iron out differences and choices. And you know, if you compare to like the seed plots in the first edition for cities, say, you know, what was it? City of
Spies?
Was it? No, Shadows was the agenda. Spies? Lies?
Spies, I thought. That'd be lies.
One of spies the that put I'm people sure in the shadows. It. Yeah, something.
I think
like
it
that.
Was spies I mean, was the one that. No, it might have been lies. It's one of the two.
Regardless, you had a couple options, but at least for the majority of the city plot,
it is lies.
Availability, they had to. You had to kind of build into a particular direction to use this stuff, and, I mean. Viability of the rest of the city plot line in second ed aside, At the Gates is just so universally good and applicable, and the type of decks that it enhances are, well, everything. Literally every deck in Thrones is better if you have more money to play stuff. And I just personally don't think we should have gone that far down that route. Not that much availability, anyway. Favorite card, I guess, is going to be Sir Mandon Moore. I thought I think it should be. Dang, I did not actually double check. What? At the Gates, it's the same pack as At the Gates, so.
So maybe we're both wrong.
So I think you're both wrong.
Damn, did it actually? Did it squeak out before the Greyjoy box? Because the Greyjoy box was definitely the last thing that came out in 2018.
Just check last year's Worlds, right?
It definitely
I can't imagine it came out before the Greyjoy box.
I thought it came out shortly before JND2 at the Gates did. Well, go ahead. I'll keep saying it, Will. I'll figure
sure,
it
out. Sure. Well, anyway, the rest of the thought there about Mandon Moore is, of course, A, it was the first Lannister card I was actually excited to see in quite some time. But B, I actually thought was a just well-done, kind of elegant convergence of a number of themes. He had an ability that was actually relevant to the use of the Shadows keyword. And, you know, when you might leave him in shadows and then bring him out to time that ability for maximum carnage. And that's even aside from the different ways we got to potentially recycle him multiple times. His kill or discard already fits into two different themes that Lannister has. Plus, he kind of inadvertently pushes the discard theme in the rest of Lannister, because if your opponent only has one or no cards in hand, they must kill something, which means you take the choice out of their hand, you get the stronger option, and so on. So it pushes their discard in order for you to get the better choice here. Just in general, I think a lot of things were elegantly done with Mandan that make him very interesting and well-designed without stepping over that overpowered cliff. So there we go.
My favorite card to designate Gene is Valyrian Steel. It is the only agenda I plan on ever playing again in my whole one tournament left, but it would be even if I were playing 10 more. I think it just does cool things. I like shocking no one. I like things that make games feel different instead of making them feel very samey. And Valyrian Steel does that because you have to account for numerous different attachments that you draw in different games, different possibilities. It makes the game feel really interactive and different, even if certain factions cough, cough, the two best, Night's Watch and Targ, and make it feel a little bit samey.
Yeah,
My least favorite card is Bound for the Wall. I just hate that level of variance. Big shock. Rising Fast, however, is Bribery, because Bribery is extraordinarily stupid.
Interesting. I would not have guessed Bribery on your list of stuff.
Oh, man. Glazer spilling the tea.
Am I? I mean, sure. It's just dumb and annoying, and everyone knows it. Like, it's not a secret that you can stick a mercenary contract and take whoever the hell you want.
That's fair.
It's obnoxious. I just hate that. I just don't like that level of variance. I don't like that level of you can't do anything. Right? Like, you see a hand's judgment or have a great game.
Man, but didn't you, like, super push stuff like Ward? I mean, that type of play is right up your alley.
Nah, Ward is a 4-cost max. And, like, it's, like, you were mostly warding things to try and get them out of play immediately. Once that thing is bribery, it's yours for the game, then. There's nothing you can do about that. Yeah.
Sure.
Like, I don't like Bound. I don't like character steal that I can't do anything about. Like Ward, if I hit a confiscation or I hit a, like, my little target attachment thing or whatever, like, it's gone. You get your character back, right? Like, Bound, cool, that's your character now. There's nothing to do about a bribery. That's your character now. That's not interesting. That's just variance.
I wouldn't describe it as variance, but I understand what your point is.
Well, bound is variance.
Bound is variance, but bribery is not. Bribery, it lacks interactivity. Like, you just can't interact.
Yeah, unless you happen to have a hand judgment. Yeah. I note that I don't really hate Yorin nearly as much. Because, like, at least Yorin involves things to be done. Right? Like, I still think Yorin is dumb, but
similar,
I don't...
Similar, it's a ward.
Right, but I think he's still probably too good. That extra one cost on there is huge. And that it's two bodies while the other was just an attachment is silly. Yeah. But
more answerable, like, and there's interaction with him, right? Like a Dracarys.
Exactly. So while I don't exactly. So while I don't like him, I don't hate him either. I do hate Bound and I do hate Bribery. Because I don't like Shrug GG.
I mean, events. I mean, Dracarys is the greatest example of this, right? Events are very dangerous design spaces in Thrones because there's, generally speaking, like a really high opportunity cost to interact with them. Yeah. Because Hand's Judgment is such a garbage card. And like Baera, like one of the reasons why you kind of sometimes, like, I think Baera is like one of the like secret best factions is Privileged Position. Right? That's the name of the Baera event canceled that also cancels attachments.
Yeah. Yeah.
Or not attachments, location abilities, has a second use, right? And it's why when the plot cancel version of Martell Wars was really powerful, like, it's because that event cancel had a second use.
Well, the plot cancel was the real goal. Event cancel.
Yeah, but it had a second use, right?
I'll do never that, I'll do that sometimes, right?
Yeah, yeah. So, like, that's the problem with Thrones, and And so it means really swingy events like Bound and
Bribery.
I mean, even Put to the Sword and Put to the Torch, which I've been complaining about since the core set.
I can't believe we never got them restricted.
And Treachery are all like really, really powerful.
Love me.
So like, and Treachery is probably, I think, the fairest of all of those because it is like another form of interaction.
Well, and you need to have a Lani unique, so you can't Lani just stick unique. It in everything. And then they, you know, we're like, let's put it on a stick and make it broken. Whatever.
Yeah. Well, so
since control.
Anyway, events are dangerous design space. Anyway, so.
Right. If you could change one thing about your past year in regards to AGOT, what would it be?
If I could change one thing?
That's the next question.
One thing. Jesus.
I'm going to be nice to Will and not say the thing I thought.
Here. If... Well, I don't know for sure what that would be now.
I've got mine, so if you're not ready. I would have Dark Nodge not suck and beat Tom Bellucci so we win Gen Con.
That is...
Your year. That's somebody else's year.
My year.
That's... I mean, I agree. I mean, that's a really good one.
Remember to use the attachment on your character that auto wins you the game, please. Thanks, Notch. Appreciate you.
Second, two for two at Gen Con making those decisions. Yeah, of course, John still like one of the goats.
In fairness, it's so hard to see that play, the attachment in play, whatever.
So I think it would be my inability to go to Trial by Combat, which was the North Jersey Necked event.
My birthday that I was in Columbia for.
Yes. I didn't go because of a job lead that ended up being a shaggy dog sort of story. And so it is very frustrating. That's probably the least emo boy answer that I can give about this year in Thrones. Besides obviously the game dying.
Okay. Well, yeah. That's why I was kind of trying to corral that a little with your year.
The game is dying? Huh. Hasn't come up.
Never would have heard. Mine is pretty simple and straightforward. I really wish I had made it to Gen Con this past year. Yeah,
we do too.
For a variety of reasons.
I didn't go.
Yeah.
Not Thronestoberfest, Will? Ouch. Yeah. Cold-blooded, man.
Well, I mean, in a more broad sense, I honestly wish I had just been able to travel a lot more for Thrones this past year. For a variety of reasons that wasn't possible, which means I missed the largest North American tournament in the last few years, or not ever, right? The first Gen Con for Second Ed was the biggest.
I think this year's war might have been that. It was pretty close.
Didn't JND2 beat war?
Maybe.
Yeah, I thought JND2 was the biggest this
give me
year,
one sec.
For sure. Yeah, North
hard to remember events that don't exist. Let's just keep going.
But I mean, I've never made it out to War or Thronestoberfest. I missed the last official Gen Con for Thrones. Just, you know, in retrospect, I would have kind of reallocated some resources, both time and monetarily. So, okay, sarah, sarah, I right. suppose.
Yes, by the way, JND2 was bigger than...
How many people? 150?
It was bigger than...
I thought it was 120-something.
It was bigger than War, but the biggest in Jousting Pavilion is the 2017, the year Alex Black won. I don't... Chris's year is not in...
It is not.
But that was Pavilion. So, you know, those two years would be the biggest so tournaments.
What was the best deck or play innovation of the year?
Oh, I have a very specific answer for this one. So I'm going to like exclude what I think we did at Gen Con, which is up there. But I think that the was WAMA proving that a city's plotline was competitively viable was, I think, really interesting that? Innovation.
I'm not I think even trying to like, be rude. I just don't remember.
In his UK, his UK nationals like list that he won with, where he was running City Besieged, and we were all very skeptical, right? We were like, well, City Besieged is really good, but like, where are like what are the other city plots you want? Like, but WAMA willing to in that like classic WAMA way, like take the risk, like do the math and take the risk and prove us all wrong, right? And really sort of like show that you could do that in a way that's competitively viable and blew out the meta. Like that where City Besieged was at that time was so strong. And it just sort of like shook that tournament up and it shook the meta up in a way that I think was really cool. And like it's kind of like high end tech and thinking about the game that I love. Like that's what I love about Thrones at like a high level is that kind of innovation and that kind of like meta read, which now to bring it back to humble bragging. We did a very similar thing at Gen Con. I think our Free Folk deck was also a very similar thing where we read the meta, we knew it, the meta was very close to solved, and we brought a deck that answered the very specific problems that that meta presented. And all the Free Folk decks made day two, and we had two in the top four and one in the finals that, and just narrowly lost out to one of the best card gamers in the FFG card space. So it's that kind of innovation that I like really love about this game, and it's meta at the highest level and the thing I'm going to miss most actually when the game dies.
It only dies when we let it die, there. Boy. Mine's much shorter and sweeter. I just love that Mill is right into that borderline viable realm. I always love alternate win conditions, and finally getting enough pieces to make it a legit but not literally busted deck type really, really pleases me at the moment.
All right. My best and worst are both by the same player. That is Colt Humbert.
Colt's
great. I think the single best innovation is the double return to the fields. I think that resets are kind of useless in the game right now, and Colt's innovation is the reason why. I just think it was completely brilliant, and every deck now has the plan for it, and resets are like in this really weird, awkward place. Is it my favorite innovation? No. But it's the one that's like best in like where the game ended up, because I feel like where the game ended up, resets ended up being like kind of bad. The worst deck innovation is Mill, because Mill should have never been a loss condition or a win condition in this game. It was just a dumb decision from the day one.
Oh no, I think it's a great decision.
Yeah, but you're wrong. Since
I honestly wish that there was a third win condition in general. That was always something I loved about the old L5R. Multiple different win paths was super cool.
Yeah, sure. I wouldn't mind multiple different win paths. I just think that one's stupid, or at least make it have to be an agenda that makes everything else harder or something.
I would not turn down an agenda that gave you that win condition.
Yeah, that I wouldn't hate as much. It's just that being a thing in the game is annoying. Almost as annoying as our original decision of counting cards in deck on ties, which remains the single dumbest fucking thing I've ever
heard. It is a win condition, though.
I've lost on it multiple high stakes games.
So
I play real fast, so it has never ever happened to me. I just on a purely like intellectual level, think it's remarkably stupid. Like, it's just so, like, we're tied. We played so even. Let's base everything on luck now. Just fucking flip a coin at that point. I can't. Whatever. Let's move on. What's your worst set? What's your worst?
Well, I mean, I wouldn't really say that. That's luck.
It's like, hey, we're going to punish you for doing good things in the game. Have fun.
It's a measure of who was doing better with less resources at their disposal. If I've drawn 20 cards and you've drawn 15, but we both tied out at the end of time eight power or whatever, theoretically speaking, I'm playing better because I have less than my disposal.
That's remarkably facile. Let's say I drew two locations and you drew 15, right? Like, that's no.
Well, also, that's not how Thrones works. But it's not just how Thrones works, right? It's how card games work, right? Even in a game where, with like Magic, where mill has been a willing condition since the original game, right? And you know, and since they printed millstone, which I think is like the antiquities or whatever, it's only a problem until you're at your one last card, right? Like in Thrones, you always want to be drawing as many cards as you possibly can within the tempo of the game, whatever. And it's never a bad thing to be at until you're at your 59th card. And there's one card sitting at the top of your deck, and you're like, oh, crap. That's never a problem, right? In fact, in many ways, like, on a pure, like, all the metrics except for the tiebreakers.
I mean, is that a problem in any other game? I mean, just because you brought Magic up also, like,
it's not a problem. What I'm saying is,
either?
My point is more of this, Will.
Okay.
You are, like, even if you're tied to power, like, from all variety of the metrics, you're winning a game if you've drawn five more cards than your opponent or drawn seven more cards than your opponent. If you're particularly, if you're at parity to the point where you came to a tie and then you lose because you triggered your messenger raven two more times than your opponent did, which is a time I've lost in a Night's Watch thing.
Well, see, I would argue that you are favoring randomness when you do that, because like then you're basically saying, hey, I should be rewarded because I happened to draw two messenger ravens and my opponent's messenger ravens happened to be at the bottom
that it just
of
shouldn't
deck.
Be considered as a tiebreaker.
It shouldn't
not
be
that,
considered at all, because it doesn't matter until you're fully milled.
That I posted a Glazer here.
I mean, I'm arguing that it can be used as a metric before someone's completely milled, but like then you run into issues that like some kind of tiebreaker does need to be instituted after power.
I'm
like, do you go with initiative? Like whoever happened to flip initiative that turn,
or
that is not fair.
Flips the highest initiative plot wins. Go. Because now it's not a happened, it's something you can plan for, and it's fine.
Once
you start getting close to
that, using cards in deck as a metric of how well you're performing based on how many cards you've actually already seen
is vastly superior to that. Is a strategic decision at that point. Let's say, because if you know you're coming close to time, odds are you flipped around plots. Do you try and save a high value plot? Do you try and save a high initiative plot? Do you try and close? What do? You include an extra high initiative plot? Now you've got actual strategy involved versus literal pure variance.
No, strategy that would have to be like awkwardly dictated on like round one. Like, oh man, I shouldn't play because I might need that eight initiative if this game runs to 58 minutes.
So that's not a concern. It is a strategic decision I would make if I was playing a slower deck.
If a game is running that long, you probably aren't cycling.
There's zero chance of a game going 58 minutes and me not cycling plots, unless I'm playing someone that
I frequently in those games. I mean, unless we're truly playing some gracefully slow wall game where your opponent chooses to math out every challenge phase that they can't win any challenges productively. And, you know, those are the only games where I've not cycled plots and gone to time.
Yeah, it's just, and at that point,
my opponent's like,
at that point, if you're playing
a, you've got 38 strength. I've got 39 strength. It's like, oh my god, just pass challenges. Like, you can't do anything.
I mean, I've said just pass. You're not doing anything to people before. But you know, I mean, neither here nor there. Like at that point, like if I know I'm playing a wall deck and I'm trying to decide for my last plot, I'm strongly considering something with 7 or 8 initiative, right? Like, and now it's a strategic point. That's not just like, did I see a messenger raven versus did my opponent see Thorn? Like, cause that's just luck. No one's not triggering Dorn. Cause no one on Earth is then, not triggering Dorn because of Dorn's on deck. No one's competent.
I'm not a fan of a strategic decision that boils down to, did I put a card with a big number in my deck? That's like saying, hey, you should win tiebreakers if you have 8 cost when, Danny in your deck because she's more expensive than everything else.
High impact card is the difference. Because if I'm up 1 power, that changes my strategy.
That's not necessarily high impact. Oh, in fact, I would argue high initiative plots generally tend to be low impact.
That's 1,000% not true in a Game of Thrones. The living card game, 2nd edition, March to the Wall, Forced March are 2 of the highest initiative plots. They are not low impact. The one that gains you an extra power is a high initiative plot, and you might want to use it the turn before to try and quote. Like, there are multiple. Like, I can't think of a single really high initiative plot that is low impact that I would ever run, even if that were the tiebreaker.
No. Well, okay. Initiative aside, I will at least say I am glad that even at this late stage in the game, we can find things that we can disagree about that passionately.
Well, I've spent the last 5 years of my life arguing about this game, so I will not run out of things to be passionate about. So
great, that's good. So. Given that last statement, is there anything in your opinion that has really shifted on the year in regards to the game?
I mean, obviously it's the game dying. The long, endless death march since the middle of the year. I think it's the root of a lot of the issues that, you know, have occasionally come up in this community. And just a lot of, it's just demoralizing knowing that this game that you're putting all this effort into and, all these things is ending. It's just really hard, and it has definitely changed my attitude. And it's, I think, also pretty clearly changed the attitude of other people involved in the game.
I have a different answer than I thought of. Okay. 'Cause that was definitely my answer that Roy stole when the audio ended. Mine is the heat death of control, because there's nothing even like control in the game.
So Shadows.
Shadows isn't control. Shadows doesn't play like control.
It's control deck in its own way.
I mean, I guess the
Lannister
the Lannister one is kind of control. Yeah, the Tyrell one isn't control at all anymore.
Yeah. It's kind of a temple now that, control.
Well, I mean, I think the Tyrell agenda one, Shadow, Kingdom of Shadows, is pretty controlly.
And I guess the Barra Shadows is kind of controlly. It's just,
I mean, most of the Shadows effects are control effects, right?
Yeah.
Or passive power.
It's just, but they're just control effects that support aggro more than they used to be. You know what I mean?
Yeah, I mean, aggro control is, again, this is something that can also be saved for when we do our wake of this game. But aggro control remains like the best control strategy in second edition, or passive power control. Yes. So
I just feel like Burn died. And like Burn died, all Martell control died, so icon control is basically dead. And like Shadow, the controllier shadows are just usually not as good as the like more aggressive shadows, and it's just like Barra got really far from Neil during the year. Like, I just feel like a lot of the controls, even Night's Watch isn't really running their passive power like control anymore. You just feel like it's all kind of gone. Like, it's just, like, big, splashy, swingy aggro effects for the game as it dies.
I mean, we've circled back around to where we were early in the game now, right? Wasn't that basically the complaint in the first year?
Yeah, I mean, it's reasonably similar. There's more, it's more varied, right? Like, it's not all one faction or one thing, but, like, a couple of Valerian Steels, Barra, Kohor, and Targ Sea of Blood, like, seems to be the majority of the meta. Seems to be the meta.
Yeah. Well, my answer to this question is slightly different because in Aaron's reading of the question, some word order was slightly changed, which changes the meaning of the question. So I was thinking of it as, has your opinion on anything changed in the year? Has it changed in your opinion? So my opinion that has, I think, shifted this year is I wouldn't say I've come as far around to hating dupes as Scott does, but I definitely remember getting into some arguments with him defending them on the show, and I've moved much closer to his side of things. I do think they are a bit out of whack in first ed. Or sorry, second in ed, second ed. First ed was out of whack the other direction. We swung the pendulum the other way. So that's what's changed for me.
What's changed for me then is the death of resets, but we already touched on that.
Yeah. I mean, that's arguably more just the game rather than your opinion. Like, you still want resets to be
On them being a necessity. Like, I could see myself running a deck that just didn't run a reset now, whereas that wouldn't have even been a consideration
before. Okay. I gotcha.
Right?
That makes sense.
Broad sweeping opinions that have changed. I guess my opinion of the shadows mechanic has changed a lot over the year. I thought it was in a pretty good spot at the beginning of the year, and then I thought it was pretty unhealthy for a while, and then I think it's kind of like back to being in a pretty good spot. So I guess that would probably be the biggest thing that's sort of like really hard shifted over the year that isn't like just sort of like flowing along with the meta. So I mean, I'm talking about like a design level and how the decks sort of are constructed even in a vacuum kind of way. About
when I went from really liking it to really not liking it. I think there were too many return to shadows effects. I think shadows is a much more interesting mechanic when you get each effect once.
Well, yeah, I mean, kind of an offshoot of the shadows cards themselves, in that like a lot of the best use just is using a bare handful of shadows cards multiple times, and a lot of the other cards that technically I suppose have shadows printed on them either don't really interact with shadows at all or are just really subpar. So
right, like our non, like Skagos, right, which is like a
shadows
card. I think it's also because the opportunity cost of playing shadows cards in second edition is so much higher than it was in first edition, because of where the gold curve is and the way tempo works, that for shadows to like really be able to compete with particularly the high power mid range strategies that second edition is all about, it needs to have that kind of like value engine, that kind of like going in and out of shadows, doing the same powerful effect multiple times, I think is the way in which shadows decks keep up with the other powerful strategies that sort of exist. And I feel like if they were that kind of like one-off effect in that they were in first edition, like it would have had to like significantly have lowered the cost of cards going into shadows or coming out of shadows, or have made the effects even swingier than they already are. So I think that, like, for mechanic-like shadows, like, I think it ended up in a pretty decent place, particularly once they started printing some answer cards to it. And people also began to figure out, like, what answer cards are good against.
Okay. I don't love answer cards without counterplay, but yeah, it's fine.
Yeah, I mean, I agree, but, like, also, like, all if you don't have answer cards to shadows, like,
yeah,
it's hard
yeah.
to interact with shadows.
That's, that, so. That's why.
yeah. Well, due to the very nature of the
shadows, right? So, like, it could be anything, but you can only do it once. It's fine. It
yeah, doesn't matter anymore. I mean, yeah, but then, like, shadows has to cost, like, 1 gold. And then, like, I don't know. It's like a whole we're at that point, we're just Danny. like, we have to, like, roll yeah. the whole thing back up.
Fair enough. And
we can't do right. that.
Which one do you want to do next, Will? There's, I think, 4 left.
Let's see. We hit on those.
High-low beverage 2020.
Yeah. Yeah, there we go. Okay. Yeah, we got back into order. That's mm-hmm. what threw me off. Okay, so let's go with a lighter one then. How about we just do these in order from there on out. So what beverage is best for hanging out with Thrones people?
I don't care what other people are drinking. As long as I have whiskey, I'm happy.
But which whiskey? What's your favorite?
I mean, look, I don't have any money, so it's usually just Jameson on the rocks. So I'm fine with that.
Okay. That's a worthy choice, I think. Nothing mind blowing, but certainly worthy.
Doesn't blow my bank.
Yeah.
Fair. Roy? I mean, I only drink beer, so I only do shots on special occasions. So
not even his wedding.
Very, very special occasions. So it's true. No, I'm glad I didn't.
Wow. Have
well, I need to be coherent at my wedding, so.
my wife felt me.
You left early, Glazer,
what do you want me to do? Just be like, go home?
Did I give you a hard time at the time?
Go back to the B&B, and I was like, I can't. I'm married to her. That is wrong.
Yes, I agree 100%. You made the right decision. But I needed to be coherent. So it's beer for me. I think for me, a better answer would be like, my favorite thing sitting at the end of 2019 is just the memories I have of just like at the end of a big tournament sitting around with like a group of my favorite Thrones players and just having some beers and tossing the shit about the game, about the community, about politics, about life. It's usually Brooklyn Lagers what we have my favorite beer is Adulting, which is local here in Philly. I mean, Glazer knows specifically which memory I'm thinking of right now.
I know it's not Props and Scots, but hey, because he might be listening, Props to Scantrell.
Yeah. Definitely props to Steve. He hung out with us at the end of Thronestoberfest and has the spare long lance.
Honorary lance for life. Once you're in, you're in. Unless, you know, you rob people or decide people's race for them or something. So don't do that. Don't do that, Scantro. All right.
Yeah.
But yeah, like that's really what will. Those are the memories that I'll take with me, at Thrones. They're definitely some of the best ones.
Well, there you go. Personally, I think I'm gonna stick to the beer realm as well, and I'm going to go with something widely available so that I can drink it no matter where I am hanging out with folks. I'm just gonna go with classic Guinness, and yeah, it's solid, and man. It's a little bit of a bummer that I haven't been to Worlds in a couple of years because, man, did Thunder Bay keep me rolling in Guinness the last couple
this year.
Years I was there.
Or next year, I guess, technically. This Worlds.
Oh, yeah. Definitely. Yeah. Yes.
Highest high?
Okay. Highest high. For me this year, that's an easy one. That was getting to host U.S. Nationals / Grands for a second time and managing to beat the Thrones attendance at Gen Con. That was a nice little coup. The venue, I think, was fun. It was a pretty harebrained idea I'd had several years ago. And as rumors started getting out there and things looked kind of dicey for the future, I was extremely, extremely glad that we were able to pull off Pythian for this year. So I think it's hard to have a much higher note than that, unless I were to, you know, finally put some money towards a trip to Stalik. So there we go.
Who's up?
This is our of the year. Favorite memory.
Highest high of the year, sure.
Or favorite of the year?
Yeah.
Highest high of the year. Highest high of the year was probably. It was probably when. Well, there's like a couple. I think August was a really good time for I and my teammates. The Gen Con summer, like that month though, right? Where we went good finishes at Gen Con, good finish at German Nationals, good finish at Nats, good finish at Canadian Nationals, right? Like it was like four major tournaments. The Lance is just kind of like steamrolled. And we had put a lot of work in over the summer. Just like felt really good. It felt very similar to the previous summer where we also like put up really good results, and to be able to do that 2 years in a row was like really satisfying, particularly with all the chaos that was going on at the time. It definitely was pretty affirming. And then the other one would be the number of people who came to Thronestoberfest. It like really blew my mind that many people were willing to come. All 80 of the people who made it out, it was just really great. And particularly like Friday night, the pre-party was just like really cool and really affirming of this community's general goodness.
I'm going to be selfish and go with Team Tar coming in second at that same tournament. Because that was going to be Gen Con, but like I don't want to just ape the same answer. That's no fun. So like it's Team Targ. So props to Team Targ. Yeah, never forget. We were supposed to be worst. We ended up second somehow. Tied for second. Love Arroyo. No shade on Arroyo ever. Low. Because I can do mine in one word, and it won't even be a name. It won't even be a name, but it will be a proper noun. Ready? Nazi.
Sure.
We can keep going.
Okay.
I mean, at this point, like, I know we try to, in recent episodes, we've been probably more negative than the White Book usually is. But, you know, this podcast and this community took a really big hit in August. And I think that was the lowest low for me. Like, I mean, it was very devastating when all of that stuff happened. And
just to clarify stuff. We don't necessarily need to go hard down that road. Well, are we talking personal
we're
stuff?
We're down a podcast
with a person.
So okay.
I haven't wanted to delve hard into that on the show, and I'm going to allow some now, even if we don't go all the way down. But I just wanted to make sure, because that first bit of news from FFG that looked like, yeah, the game is ending, also was in August. So I wanted to make sure which one you meant.
Yeah, it's the interpersonal one. Yeah, that was very devastating. I think it is safe to say on the show.
Somehow
for
that's
the show,
only my number three of the
and
year.
And for the community.
Christ, what a year.
Yeah, yeah, it's been a wild,
the game died
wild year looking back on it. But that, yeah, I think that is also my personal lowest low. It just felt so out of left field, like not the type of thing I've ever had any sort of personal dealing with. And everybody I've known, like, despite having some personality conflicts and people that do or don't like each other, there's never been anything like this. It's still been a very, very tight-knit community as far as relationships go. So, you know, something like that just really, really threw me for a loop for a while.
Still throwing me through a loop. I think it's a very different level of drama. Then I think that's if there's one takeaway from 2019 in this community, it's been a low point. We've had a lot more of real stakes drama this year. In a way that, like, I don't think was ever really the case. Or if it was the case, it was always a minor note of the sort of ebb and flow of a bunch of poorly socialized 20 and 30 somethings caring a lot about a hobby kind of drama. We, you know,
I'm gonna let that go. Seems wise,
but
it might be wise.
I'm not going to ask the question of Will. I'm dying to ask because it's so mean. But it's not mean to you. It's just a mean question in general. I'll tell you off air. What are you looking forward to most in 2020?
Okay. I mean, that one's a quick and easy answer for me. It's Worlds. I haven't made it the last 2 years, so I'm dying to get back there and see everybody.
I don't know. I'll be honest with you. I don't know if I'm going to be able to make it to Worlds. So we'll see. Like, I really don't know. It's hard in a variety, in every aspect of my life. It is hard to think about what 2020 is going to be like. And so I really don't have an answer.
Gathering, particularly, we're going to Vegas. There's a point next year
that
where
really
John has like his stupid poker nonsense, like a comped ridiculous room for all of us to just crash at. So like,
does he want to do Magic Fest Vegas next year, which is like roughly around Gen Con.
Like Vegas is a cheap flight, a free hotel. Like, all right. Huh? Oh yeah, Vegas is always a super cheap flight because they just want to get people there, so they spend money.
Oh yeah, yeah. I was gonna say, flights
Vegas
from
is the cheap,
here
like the cheapest
are
flight in the continental
Vegas
U.S.
Even.
As a general rule. So cheap. Yeah, that it's the one. Like, it's my friend's trip outside of Worlds. It'll be my friend's trip, and like that's it. That's what I'm doing. I'm going to Vegas. I'm gonna play some draft and two-headed giant. I'm gonna not give a shit because I'm not especially good at either. Have a great time. I'm gonna drink too much.
I mean, $400 round trip.
Yeah,
it's day after Christmas.
It's
the last minute. Yeah,
that's what's happening.
Pretty good.
So that's what I'm looking forward to. I'm going to see a bunch of friends and invite a bunch of the people that are probably listening to this, as many as possible, and just like have a blast and enjoy not having to deal with certain people in certain situations.
That sounds pretty good.
Sounds good.
Now I feel like I have to double check this. Oh, dang. I was double checking since Roy looked up some prices just now. I can't quite do the day after Christmas. I can't do the 26th, but the 27th I could do round trip from here in the middle of nowhere, Missouri, to to Vegas for $298. Did not expect that to be even less than Philly.
Philly is actually, that's the point, right? Like,
see if I do it,
the beauty of Magic isn't even that necessarily that it's such a good game. It's that it's so easy for us to get lost in and just stay in touch. Like, that is literally what I'm using that game for. We can get lost, meet places that are cheap, sunny, and fun, have a blast together, and you know, it keeps us all friends, it keeps us all in touch. I'm for it. And I guess that could be the first prop, right?
Yeah. Yeah, I'm good with transitioning to some props and some slops.
Oh, wow, yeah. Once you get closer at, wow, this is kind of
ridiculous. Yeah. Yeah. Well, I mean, you're totally right that Vegas is, like, markedly, notably cheaper than flying anywhere else. It's a little weird. I mean, it makes sense when you really stop and think about it, I suppose. But if you're not, if you're looking at it in a vacuum compared to anything else, it really stands out. Like,
the night of Thronestoberfest, as I was talking about this with Schoenthal, like, we're getting, like, drunk and just discussing, and, like my mind started churning. It was like, this is just the solution to our problem. And here we are. It's the solution.
There you go.
Can I prep some pop culture stuff?
I want to
prop Knives Out by director Rian Johnson, who is a complete genius auteur. I'm so torn.
I want to watch that movie.
I said it and got my knives out for Will.
Well done.
It was fantastic. It was genuine.
But man, I do like pretty much everybody that's in that movie. So
much fun. Not perfect, but so much fun. So you're still looking at prices, Roy?
I'm not looking at prices for Worlds.
Is it?
So we're Valentine's.
Seriously?
Day. Oh, no, I thought it was right before. Isn't it the, like, 6th through 8th or something?
Is it that early? Well, I can look it up. Worlds. Games. Go to OP. OP.
If it's Valentine's Day, they're just so dumb. Please tell me it's not Valentine's Day. Like, because I was planning on going 100%, but I'm not sure if I can, like...
World Championships, there we go. No, that... Yeah, but that doesn't tell me anything.
All right.
World Championship exists.
I'm going to prop the Marvelous Mrs. Maisel.
Yeah.
It has been fantastic.
Oh, I still need really to start. Fun.
I greatly enjoy it. My wife is mad at me because we are not watching right now.
Well, bummer. Continuing the TV show note, I think I'm going to throw both some props and some slops. Some props to...
The beginning of February. So that's
basically Valentine's Day weekend. Okay, go ahead.
It's the weekend before Valentine's Day weekend. Valentine's Day is actually on the weekend.
So I'm going to figure out when my break is this year.
Sure. So I'm going to throw out some props as we continue to work back through the shows of our childhood on Disney Plus. We've been rewatching Smart Guy, which is fun for all its late 90s, early 2000s ish. Also, I realized, I don't think I noticed this before, but I realized it now, that they are definitely reusing sets from Boy Meets World. Like they changed the name on like the sign in the hall of the high school, and that's it. And I think they changed some wallpaper and maybe some paint, and otherwise the kitchen's the same. So that cracks me up.
Yeah.
Roy is busy with flights.
Yeah. Okay. Slops to I never thought I would say this, but slops to Kevin Feige, then, who...
God, is this about what's continuity and not continuity?
Not necessarily what is or isn't, but just that, like, the official final word came out today that Marvel TV is being shut down, and they're letting a bunch of people go, and so on and so forth, and they said, like, current projects already in development or production or something along those lines would go carry on, which amounts to like 4 animated shows and Hellstrom, because they've already been canceling everything else over the last few months. So I do not expect any of the rest of these to get off the ground. So it's just kind of a bummer to see things that I was excited about or enjoyed killed by the like interpersonal beef between executives at Disney. So yeah,
flights to bummer. Worlds are really cheap.
That's good.
Yeah, that's what I'm looking at right now. The problem is the returning flight. Yeah. I will slop the like, cost of the returning flight.
Sorry.
Like,
I mean,
the non-Sunday morning flights are like
on Sunday morning,
much more water. Expensive. Well, I mean, like, that means, like, for me, like, we could talk about my specific struggles here if I can make this work. I will slop, though, not being Valentine's Day is a that prop for Roy's personal life, my professional life, it's a slop. It's a very bad Friday. So yeah, I really don't have much. Props to PAX. PAX Unplugged. That was really fun.
Yeah, there you go.
So. Oh yeah.
Props to what's the Magic podcast I really like. Lords of Limited, yeah. I actually subscribed to their Lords Patreon, and that's really rare for me. I really, really enjoy Lords of Limited. I don't love Limited Resources, but I really love Lords of Limited.
Like, Constructed Podcast, you might like...
I don't know if I like Constructed.
So Pro like, Points?
My problem with Constructed... Constructed, maybe I'll like that.
So I particularly love Constructed Magic discussion.
I haven't enjoyed I don't mind playing a little bit of Constructed, like very casually. I just don't like solved metas that way. You know what I mean? Like, solved metas are not, as you know from Thrones, I think.
Yeah, yeah.
And they get solved fast in Magic.
Yeah. Well, so my two favorite podcasts for Constructed are Pro Points, which is Paulo. Vito Dama Rosa, Mike Segrist, and Sam Black. And then my other one is Arena Decklists, which is Jerry Thompson's podcast. Both of them, like, they are interested in attacking formats. So even if they're solved, they're about, like, discussing and thinking about ways in which to, like, break the formats open, or if not to break the formats open, to, like, how to play the best solved deck. And they have particularly... Arena Decklists has like really, really, really interesting and thoughtful discussions about solved formats that's like really illuminating. It has improved the way I think about Thrones, particularly over the course of like that summer when the meta got really solved. Like just the sort of insights that they had was just really useful, and like really thinking through card choices and the ways in which metas can devolve into arms races. It's just like a lot of like card game theory, which is, you know, the kind of shit I really eat up. So.
All right. Yeah, I think I'm good. All right. Happy New Year.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I'm good for now.
Cool.
Guess. Yeah. That closes this chapter of the White Book. without us even stepping into the danger zone this week. Go us.